This was a totally different choice of words from last night. So Hannah's song, this passage is also known as Hannah's Song of Thanksgiving, and it's her Thanksgiving over learning she is pregnant. And it's the precursor to Mary's song when Mary learns she is pregnant with Jesus. So what I noticed when Christian first handed me this passage to preach on is that that is not how I felt when I found out I was pregnant. Like, I was not suddenly in touch with this God of love, gratitude, and justice. And I have been thinking about in preparing for this sermon, what is my song of Thanksgiving? As I think all of you here know, that I have a 4-year-old son, and I would say the last 5 years since learning I was pregnant have really been the hardest of my life. There's been adjusting to being a new parent. There's been adjusting to my son's diagnosis of autism. And then there's been the explosion that occurred with my wife's addiction and its effects on our family, and the emotional abuse that came after that, and now divorce. So it was kind of like my prayer, unlike Hannah's, was like, and I think this is part of what brought me to St. Lydia's, was if God asks one more thing of me. And there was like this ellipsis, like I couldn't finish that sentence. It was like, I'm gonna fucking, I didn't know what the rest was. And I tried different things, kill myself, kill someone, you know, like none of it really. So this is sort of the question I'm bringing to this sermon. And I asked Christian, because of that, I'm surprised to say that, like, my topic for this sermon is justice. Like, when Christian and I, because I didn't understand how she goes from the first stand, like the first verse, where it's like, oh, I exult in, you know, rejoicing, to these, this prayer of like this God who makes things right. And there's a reordering of the world. It's like the mighty shall fall, you know, like that type of the small shall be raised, that type of reordering. And I think something I admire in a lot of, as I've sort of gotten to know Christianity as a Jewish person, is what, where does that fire for justice come from? So last night, I shared a story of like how snuffed out that fire had gotten in me. And so I think I'm gonna share it, but I'm experimenting with a different tone because there's other things I want to give weight to in this sermon. So, and for Thanksgiving 2017, my soon-to-be ex-wife had this blackout for the whole of Thanksgiving weekend. And she had taken all these drugs. And in the course of that time, she baked a pie. And she was so fucked up baking this pie that it was like she was looking at the ingredients, kind of, you know, like looking for the instructions. And I was, the reason I'm telling this story is because of how out of touch with the situation, how I didn't quite know how to be in touch with it. Because we took this pie to her family's house in New Jersey. And everyone loved the pie. Like I was like, I don't think this pie should be eaten. You know, it was set out among all the food. And people were like, you know, Kim, don't let yourself forget what you did when you made this. You know, it was so delicious to such an extent. Like, I didn't know if she had even like put, like there could have been anything in that pie. And, but I was so out of touch that even I like ate the pie. And I also like made the choice to like get in a car with her. And so I'm sharing this story because it wasn't until 3 years after that that we got separated and that I initiated the divorce. And I think it's because it's not that I didn't know that this situation was terrible. It was that I didn't know how to know. And I didn't know how to like integrate that into this story of my life. And so I think I was coming from this perspective of my life where the abuse and the sort of dysfunction felt right. So this question of where does that sense of like things feeling wrong or feeling right and listening to that come from? So as Christian and I were talking, I said, I'm not sure I understand where that comes from. Like I know in my other traditions, Judaism, and that's a whole other story, Buddhism, I sort of know where it comes from there. And so I asked Christian about this quote, and it's a quote from Cornel West, which is a little bit out of context for, I mean, it's about a different topic, but I'm going to share it. So the prophetic voice in politics must do two things. One is to be honest about where we are, and the other is to be honest about where we can be. And in our church, in the Black church, in our tradition, we claim the victory in advance, and then we make it real. So I asked Christian about this quote, and he was explaining to me how the resurrection is often understood as a down payment on everything made well. That we're living, we know how the story ends, and we're living the promise as if it's already here. And so I've sort of been reconciling this quote with my therapist saying to me, like, fake it till you make it. And I've sort of been thinking about it like this, like you can't be honest about where you can, and this is why I asked for us to hold the mixedness in, as the dinner prompt. You can't be honest about where you can be if you can't be honest about where you are. But I think an equally underestimated reality is that you can't be honest about where you are if you can't be honest about where you can be. And so fake it till you make it. I think I'm grateful for my therapist's advice. Like she's an amazing therapist and my family could have died. So like, if I don't fake it till I make it, you know, that's, destructive. But I actually, this is why therapy isn't enough for me. Because the story of abuse feeling right, which is my family of origin story, isn't my only origin story. And it isn't even my family of origin's only origin story. And that doesn't even mean to me that like it necessarily is this origin story of God's that centers on God. But it's still true. Like either way, it's true that that's not the only story. And I feel like in knowing that, there's a kind of, that we can feel into that, that this, the promise is already here, that there's a kind of claiming the victory in advance, that we can feel into this thing that's beyond our story. And so in a sense, we're reordering the world in the way that's similar to that Hannah describes in the text. Because I mean, a lot of this time I've been dependent on friends to hold that sense of justice for me, of like that the situation I was living with was wrong. But there's also this holding that I feel like I'm learning to find in myself by holding these two things together, of being honest about where I am, but also, because for me, the quieter one was being honest about where I can be. And I was thinking of communion as, so I sort of, when I'm talking about Christianity, I feel like I have the privilege of making it up. You know, I'm not saying it's necessarily apologetically, but just as someone coming to it as an outsider, it's, I don't know, like, you know, there's a freshness to it that's been very healing for me. But in communion, there's this ontologically perfect bite. It's like we taste what's here and what we're longing for, but we taste it, not just the longing, but also that thing. And I feel like the promise of it is, even if we don't understand what that is somehow here with us. And so I think it's, in a way, communion is that kind of gesture of this stupid, idiotic, we've been talking for Advent of stupid, idiotic, impractical, irresponsible, a little bit out of touch hope. And so I feel like there's ways that we can taste that. And so I just want to conclude with this piece of it, which is the sense of reordering the world. So I am, because of COVID, I am temporarily filling in for one of Levi's therapists and attending his preschool with him. And today there was a lot of situations in the classroom with this one kid who was kind of, he was like hitting and he was kind of being a bully. And so it was very easy to sort of cast him in that role. And I was like feeling very protective and seeing how I could intervene. And then I took him to like wash his hands and I like did something wrong and he got pissed at me. And then he started crying and he was like, it was like, I miss my mommy, thwack. It's like that. And so anyway, I spent a lot of the day working with these kids and I realized that I was just trying to feel it out with them. There was this bully and then there was this, the kids who were being hit. And it was like, there wasn't a real solution, but I just tried to be in it with them. And so, cause I think what I wanted them to see is that the world gets reordered, that even the, so it's not like the mighty will fall and the small shall be raised, end of story, but that the God that we can get in touch with is one who continually reorders the world. And that it's that, that's where a sense of justice, like when it's fixed is when we're in trouble. Because it's not that that kid was the bad one. It's just that if it gets stuck there. So I just feel like feeling into this radical reordering in Christianity that happens is quite powerful. And that in this precursor to Mary's song, we're feeling into the incarnation as this radical thing. And just the radical honesty of being present, whether it's with each other or God's radical presence, and that how I'm working with it is in context of Paul Tillich's depiction of God as the ground of our being. And that is the reordering that we can get in touch with so that we can have this sense of justice for each other and ourselves and the world. We share the sermon at St. Lydia's. We'll spend a few moments in silent reflection. Then when you hear the bell sound, you're invited to share stories or experiences sparked by either my sermon or the text. We don't engage in opinions or crosstalk, just sharing stories, because that's what Jesus did. We begin in silence.